thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. We are bringing Tuesday night to Wednesday. Special night, Wednesday Urban Sports Scene Show. I'm Wally and I'm your host. Ray and Will T are out. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Yeah, we're on Stitcher now. We're doing big things. Real people do real things. We're on Stitcher now. So just search Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Today for me is a special day. It's the birthday of, to me, the GOAT. And I am not talking about Michael Jordan. The GOAT, to me, is Magic Johnson. I want to hear that Magic Johnson, the best point guard of all time. To me, watching basketball as a young kid, Magic Johnson was the GOAT. Magic Johnson beat the Boston Celtics. Michael Jordan couldn't beat the Celtics. He couldn't do it. He couldn't even beat the Pistons when they were really healthy. Magic Johnson did that. He beat mega squads. So I just want to say happy birthday, GOAT. Happy birthday, Irvin Magic Johnson. Will T would normally say this. He's not here, but I'll say it for him. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report will join the show to talk about last week's Skins preseason game against the Browns. And, I mean, the Skins losing that game 30-10 at 8:20. We'll preview the Skins' home preseason game against the Cincinnati Bengals. At 8:30, Talk Nats podcast Kevin Nibley will join the show to discuss if Davey Martinez is built for a real pennant race. At 8:40, I'll talk about Antonio Brown's issues with his NFL helmet. I mean, really? We talking about a helmet, though, bruh. A helmet. Finally, at 8:50, Birds Watchers Aaron Gershon will be on the show to talk about the altercation between Baltimore Orioles first baseman Chris Davis and manager Brandon Hyde. But first, right now, I have my homie, my man, Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report on the line. What's good, Adam?
HTTR, man. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm good, man. HTTR, man. You know, a lot's going on. I mean, the Skins have a preseason game tomorrow, but I want to talk about what happened last week. All right. So last Thursday, in their first preseason game, the Redskins lost to the Browns 30-10. What did you see from rookie quarterback Dwayne Haskins?
I think I saw more than others saw, because you know me, when I came on your show when I did my top 25, and mm-hmm. I had him at the back end, barely at the back end of it, you know, saying he needed a year or two to development. And I still think he could use a development, but, mm-hmm. you know, they have Case Keenum and they have a broken down Colt McCoy.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, from what I watched the game, the interceptions were easy. You know, mm-hmm. there was misplay on all positions. On the play, you know, that he had the first pick for the touchdown, mm-hmm. Robert Davis missed the pick play, played wide. That's a coaching issue. You mm-hmm. know, it was easy to see. But I'll tell you, one play that would have changed the game for him, when he had, it was a second quarter, a 13-minute mark. He had Kinsey wide open, 35-yard reception. Kinsey was gone.
Yeah.
He's got the ball punched out from behind him. That changes the game to a 200-yard game, one touchdown, two interception. That sounds far different.
Yes.
So I think it's easy to find out focus on the mistakes that he did, but I saw a lot of good from him. And, you know, I'm not on the train where, oh, he's going to come in and dominate, but I think he's the best quarterback we have. So I think that's what you got to go on. You know, my opinion, you know, like Case Keenum, we could start the year with him, but it's not going to last long. Everybody knows that.
You know what?
You know, forget lame duck. We'll be lucky if I think Giants week four is what happens, the latest he'll be in by.
Wow. You know what? You're a fair guy. That's one thing I like about you, Adam, because I remember when we had this discussion before, you were like, sit him, you know, Case Keenum and whatnot, and McCoy. Now you're saying that he's the best quarterback and maybe he should play a little sooner than later. You're a fair guy.
Yeah, you know, like I had my man Paul there. He was one of the last time we were on with you. Mm-hmm. You know, he was at training camp with me, you know, taking film and, you know, sending stuff back and forth, you know, like really he got, like, he met up with Lake Lewis and he got like the pristine spot. So it was just like all day live tweeting. We just like having fun sending back tape. Mm-hmm. And that's when I had an opportunity to see him like in go, you know what I mean? Like he's taking that practice a lot more seriously than a lot of the other guys
yeah.
are. And what I've seen from him is steady progression. You know, you want to talk about interceptions. McCoy was through 5 interceptions in camp the other day.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's the Trent Williams situation complicates everything for sure, because everyone's like, he's going to get killed. Like, we got to give the, you know, offensive coordinator some credit here, because, you know, KOC is supposed to be installing, like, a whole new set of plays, you know, cater to him. That's what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then, you know, then you change your offense. And if they're not willing to do that and he's just going to go with Case Keenum to be safe, you know, that's obviously, you know, a career move right there for Jay Gruden. That's what I think. I think if Haskins plays, it's going to be the better man. And if Keenum plays, it's just going to be a career decision for him.
All right, speaking of Case Keenum, he hit wide receiver Robert Davis for a 46-yard touchdown pass. You know Robert Davis is my guy. Head coach Jay Gruden has already come out and said that Case has a leg up on Colt McCoy for the quarterback competition. You mentioned Colt McCoy throwing about 5 interceptions in camp the other day. What did you think of Case's play last week?
Yeah, he's if you want a backup, he's a really good backup to have. He's gonna come in and he's gonna get you spot duty.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the first 5 games, if you tell me strictly like put it on him, which, you know, I think that's why we re-signed AP and we're, you know, hoping for Geist and, you know, Thompson to really do a lot. That's what I think we're gonna see a healthy dose of in the beginning, no matter who's at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Case Keenum seems like the logical choice. And that's probably what's going to happen. It's his job to lose. In my opinion, it's his job to lose it. But if Haskins, he's going to have an opportunity. He should probably be starting this game. The word is, without McCoy, he's going to be playing with some starters.
Ooh.
So if he can look really good, if he can take some of those chances and connect, it's going to be hard for the coaches to keep him out, you know, because that's just Dan Snyder, and that's when he'll get involved and he'll demand that he'll play. You know, that's just how this organization is run. But, you know, in the end, if he does show out like that, you know, with his defense, he'd probably be the best shot for us to win.
Yeah, see, I'm with you. I'm like, if this team is built the way that you're talking about, just handing the ball to AP and Geis and Thompson, does it really matter if Dwayne Haskins or Case Keenum, you know, if Dwayne Haskins doesn't know everything in the playbook? I look at Ben Roethlisberger when he was in Pittsburgh, when he started off and that defense was stout. He didn't know everything. And they leaned on the running game and defense. You can't tell me if the defense is as good as we all think it's going to be, right? You're telling me that you can't have a couple plays designed for a Dwayne Haskins that he feels real comfortable with, maybe some boots, some naked boots, but continue to pound the rock with AP and Geis. And if the defense is, you know, as good as people think it's going to be, they couldn't win games that way?
I'm glad you brought up Pittsburgh, man, because that's exactly what comes to mind with them. You know, I don't look at them. When he first came in, I was looking a little more Roethlisberger, but he's looking slim. He's looking a lot more athletic, a lot quicker than he was on tape.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's a good comparison for a model. You know, that we've built the defense. That's my latest article. You know, we invested in the defense, and it's paying off on the defensive line and the outside edge rushes now. And if they can just build the game plan, just, you know, he tucked and runs it. Like, he was doing, everyone forgets, you know, he was with Urban Meyer at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, he was a pass-first offense, but towards the end, you'll notice he was definitely taking off. There was a lot more zone reads being utilized. So he likes playing under center. That's what gives him a leg up to a lot of other quarterbacks. Like Robert Griffin, he had to be in a gun, and that's where he's most comfortable. They took basically his Baylor playbook and merged it, and that's what Griffin was. With Haskins, I really don't think they're going to have to do it as much. It's more about the retention of the signal calling and the long verbiage that, you know, the Grudens use. But I think that's the only thing going to hold Haskins back. And, you know, Keenum, you could argue he's like in his, what, fourth system in 7 years now. So I don't know. It's like pick your poison, because I think, you know, if we want to have a chance, they're going to have to lean on the run game and, you know, occasionally have a long pop. And Keenum can do that. He said, you know, Robert Davis had that burn and coverage in that game, and it looked good, you know, but got to keep in mind second, third stringers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a huge Robert Davis fan, always have been, since Georgia State. I've been scouting him. And, you know, I'm happy that I honestly thought his career was in jeopardy after his knee injury. So, you know, if Case Keenum can make a couple of those plays a game, you know, definitely. I said, you know, we'll ride with him, but not having Trent, man. that's what it is. And then Donald Penn, I'm glad they got a serviceable veteran, but not having Trent, which it sounds like it's a foregone conclusion, you know, they're going to be having a lot of growing pains on offense for sure. So the defense is going to, they're going to really have to come through.
Yeah, that's scary. The whole Trent thing is scary. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report. So, Adam, you mentioned your blog. You wrote a blog about the Skins defense named Investing in Defense. What are your thoughts on this defense as a whole? And you can talk about what you wrote in that blog.
Yeah. Honestly, the part, you know me, the part that gets me most excited is the young guys, you know, because that's what I love scouting, these young guys. And, you know, I saw Holcomb, you know, I found him a while ago.
Oh, he was great.
Years ago, and he just got better and better. Mm-hmm. And I think people are really sleeping on him, you know, because he went from a walk-on fifth string, and then one game he went to second string because they couldn't take him off the field. And next thing, he got a scholarship. So this is like a Baker Mayfield type. Everyone looked at Baker Mayfield, oh, cocky. This was a walk-on, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, people look at that like cockiness, but, you know, the thing about Holcomb, he's got the baby face, so people fall for that. But against Cleveland, I'm telling you, you know, everyone's high on Jimmy Moreland, which I'll get to in a second, mm-hmm. but they had a goal line stand, and the Cleveland running back had a wide-open hole. Holcomb right away met him at the hole. They mm-hmm. say he's small, but he did really good on that play. All of a sudden, Moreland came in. He knocked the ball out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Moreland, he's going to be the X factor because the defensive line, I think, is set. The rushes are set, and everything else is a bit of a question. You know, if Landon Collins can stay healthy, that'll be huge. But, you know, the backfield, you know, Dunbar, Moreau, you know, everyone's a question back there. And I don't know. I just see something in this kid. And he just makes plays. And, you know, I featured him in a portion of my article with the DBs because it was talking about him filling in the slot position. But at this point, I wouldn't think it's too far-fetched to think he'll play on the other side of Norman because, you know, Dunbar, he can't stay healthy. And, mm-hmm. you know, Moreau, he's a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the obvious additions, you know, on the defensive line are this team's strength. But the back end is going to be huge. And, you know, if they can get a healthy Nicholson, Focus Nicholson, this defense could be scary. You know, I got a lot of people on Twitter that are, you know, thinking this is about a little overzealous, but if, you know, you just go by numbers, you go by paper, you go by, you know, awards, leadership, you know, where these guys came from, character, this has the makings of a really good defense.
No, I'm with you. I think this defense can be lights out. My only thing, the only thing that's good to me, that's going to hurt this defense is Minuski. You know, yes. That's the only thing that's going to hurt this defense. I think we're done with the BS that this team doesn't have the talent on defense. I think this team has a plethora of talent. I think, you know, we all, you know, want to have the lockdown cornerback like Deion back in the day, Daryl Green here. But at the end of the day, these cornerbacks are good. They're deep. You know, Fabian Monroe is a starting quality cornerback in terms of talent.
For sure.
Same for Dunbar. Same for sure. Moreland. Moreland is a guy that looks like he could be a star, right? Josh Norman. Yeah. I know he gets a lot of flack, but he's still a high quality cornerback. He may not be getting he may not play up to his contract, right? Because he's paid. Like, he's super paid.
Right.
But he's still a top flight cornerback. He's not like Revis Island or anything, but he's a top flight cornerback. So, and then you look at what you're referring to is that front seven. I mean, you have speed, you have versatility up with the big boys, and also you have more speed in terms of inside linebacker. And I'm glad you mentioned Holcomb. Holcomb stood out to me against the Browns, and that's a guy to me that should be pushing Bostic and Sean Deion Hamilton. You know, I like Sean Deion Hamilton, but this kid Holcomb should be pushing both of them. So when you look at the depth they have defensively, I'm with you. I think this defense could be lights out, and I don't think you're optimistic about it at all. It just goes back to this: can Minuski coach it up? Because I'm gonna tell you this: you watch the Seattle Seahawks, you watch the Baltimore Ravens. In preseason, I know it's just preseason, the first game of preseason, it's about attitude when you coach defense. It's about attitude. And when you watch, I remember when Greg Williams first came to D.C., and in preseason, his first preseason game, you can tell that he was about being nasty and he's about bringing attitude, not just from the first string to the second string, but also to the guys who weren't going to make this team. And you saw them play like that in preseason. That's my fear about Minuski. I just think at times he has a soft mentality. And for a guy who looks super tough.
It's for me, that's, and I focus, one of my main focus in the article is John Allen. I think he's going to be the cog, in my opinion, because, well, you know, DJ Swearinger and him, you know, it's no mistake. They weren't on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could tell it on when he exited, how, you know, no bad blood, but they weren't on the same page. But now you have Landon Collins. Landon Collins is in the back end, and, you know, he can get the captain. But I think, you know, John Allen's going to bridge that gap. And thankfully, Manufsky, you know, I just hope, you know, he's going to the cover two, the cloud zones. You know, we have the talent for them to play press man now.
I'm with
you. Know, with Horton, you know, with Horton, the new DBs coach, I think we're going to see. They're saying there's going to be a lot more coaching from him in the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So I think between him, Tom Sula, they'll be able to help Ryan and Manufsky shortcomes. Because everyone, no one's expecting anything over Ryan. So I think that, you know, I'm a big Alabama fan. I've been for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the culture. And I think that the culture is what's going to rub off on the front end. Because I have people on Twitter, you know, they're like, you know, coming to me with facts about that the D-line can't do it all. I understand that. But when you have a D-line like this, we haven't, I could honestly say on paper, they haven't had one like this since 91.
Oh, easily. You're so right.
And it's about sky's the limit. But the thing is, if they get it all together, they were smart how they locked up Ioannidis. They got Allen. And now Settle, it just looks like a different kind of player. And if this guy, Sweat, can be 70% of what a lot of us think he could be, you know, they're going to be in trouble because it's all about getting pressure on the quarterback. If they talk about defenses being tired, wearing down. Defenses are causing a lot of three and outs, which I'm telling you, I think we're going to be top in the league in that category. That category and forced turnovers, I think that's one thing that we're going to be in the top ranks of the league. And that is what's going to win them games. So, you know, as far as how far it can take them, you know, with a competent running game and the way this defense can play, they can win the division. You know, does that mean 8 or 9 games? You know, I think people are a little too high on Dallas. A little people are too high on Philadelphia. That's probably what the problem is, you know. I think we're closer than people think. It's the quarterback play that separates it. But, you know, so, you know, we'll see what happens. But we haven't seen any of the defense yet. We're going to see that this week. We'll see that against the Bengals.
Yeah.
We'll see a little more next week. But we still will probably be missing a couple. I'd be surprised if Landon Collins plays. I wouldn't play him. He's still recovering from, you know, he's in practice looking good. I get it. But I'll save him for the third game, you know, let him get in a quarter. But otherwise, you're going to see the full defensive line, and I think we're going to be able to get a real sense, you know, what they can look like. But, you know, it's preseason, and the offense and defense keeps it vanilla, so everyone has to keep that in mind. It's about the youngsters getting spots more than, you know, anything else.
Yeah, that's true. You should be vanilla. But did you watch the Ravens preseason game? Did you see they are, I mean, it's just a different brand.
Teams.
It's a different brand, man.
Different
and that's what I'm saying. It's a different brand of football. And it's not like that they're defensively, right? They're that much talented, more talented than the Skins, even the Skins young guys. You know what I mean? Like,
It's identity.
Exactly. That's my point. That's
have no identity right now. That's the thing.
Then that's the thing. And you want to see, because you see, like, I'm with you, Adam. Like, I see the bodies. Like, I see the talent. Like, you couldn't, like, years ago, even when this team made the postseason, you're like, man, they're really, like, trying to mix and match certain players to make things work. Patchwork. Thank you.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at, like, this defense, like, even the guys who are the reserved individuals, guys who played in the first preseason game, I'm like, yo, they got ballers. Like, Tim Settles is out. He's a baller. He has potential. Yeah. He has massive potential. Jimmy Moreland, massive potential. When you look at some of these guys, you're like, man, like, this team has players with attitude. You know what I mean? Like, they have that fire. They have that attitude. Holcomb. You mentioned Holcomb. Like, when I watched him, I was like, dude can – you know, dude is
he's a baller.
He's a baller.
He's
special.
He's in the Luke Kuechly kind of
exactly.
For Carolina.
Exactly.
He's not the size. He's not the playing style, but he's actually quicker. You know, if you want to get technical, you know, he runs a 4.44 flat.
And it shows.
Totally went even faster. So
it,
you know, it's about putting it together. You know, what's questioned with him is his instinct. They say he's a read and react linebacker, but I don't know if you see it. The goal line, if that's read and react, I'll take that.
Any day of the week.
That hole. He sealed that hole, and Moreland came in and cleaned it up. Mm-hmm. And that's what I take from that game. All the other stuff, it's all a bunch of guys. Most of them aren't going to be on the team, or they're fringe players. You know. So, you know, but again, I'm with you. Manufsky, he's scary. But, you know, I think that the defensive line finally is going to – Allen, he's definitely going to take on the leadership. And I think that that's going to be all the difference, you know, how good that they can be.
I'm with you. Well, Adam and I will preview the Skins' next preseason game against the Bengals after break. Listen to Urban Sports saying for ages. You dig? Deuces.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wally. I'm the host. Will T and Ray are out, so they have me holding it down solo in terms of the Urban Sports Scene. But I have my man Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report with me. So Adam, I wanted to mention this, you know, in our last segment, but still, let's just jump back into it. All right. Wide receivers, Josh Dotson didn't play. McLaurin didn't play. Cam Sims was used towards the end. I wanted to see him with the ones. Did you have an issue with the way the Skins used their wide receivers last week?
Yeah, for sure. I don't like. Come on, man. You know, Kinsey's not making the team. You know, like these other guys, they're not making the team.
Yeah.
You know, like I would have liked to seen Harmon a lot more with the starters. Mm-hmm. They should have gave that guy like a full game. Mm-hmm. You know, come on. You know, he's on the borderline. I think he's going to make the team, but he's on the borderline. But like we were saying, you know, Dotson, you know, what are they scared about? You know, if he's going to get hurt in the preseason,
then he's done.
Then
he's done.
You know,
mm-hmm.
But they never were counting on him to be a go-to man. Because right now, from my early outlook, it's going to be Dotson that's going to be rotating with Sims.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to have on the other side, it's not like, you know, Richardson, he's going to lose his job because he's not going to stay healthy. And that's going to be on McLaurin.
Mm-hmm.
McLaurin's going to be on the other side. With Quinn in the slot, so you know if Reed can stay healthy, if you know he's a safety blanket for any quarterback that's going to be playing. So
yeah.
You know, these are little things. You know, Jay, that's the thing about Jay Gruden. Like I think he's all in with Jordan Reed. So I hope that you know with KOC in, there's going to be a lot more run concepts that aren't just duo plays and you know going in the same place, taking these wide outside runs. Like you know Peterson, you know he showed me he can bust it through the middle. You know. Darius Geis, you know, that's what I want to see from him, you know, and I think that they can do enough to be a good team. I think they've got enough depth, again, with the offensive line and Trent Williams' situation, it just complicates everything again. So I think, you know, my man, you know, Paul, it was on last time with us, he was saying, you know, the talk today have been Clowney, trading Clowney.
I know.
And they're talking about Clowney for Trent Williams. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, no, the Ryan Kerrigan. Let's be real. Like he's a good player. I really like him.
I like Ryan.
But is he a game changer? Is he a total game changer? He's at $13 million. He's going to be gaining more than that. He's coming up for a contract extension in the next year or two. Are you going to commit to him in his 30s? You know, with sweat on the other side. So you know, if the Clowney thing is open, I would definitely consider it. But you know, that means that they've done everything with Trent Williams they can,
mm-hmm.
and nobody else has given them a first round pick. Because I don't think they're going to get a first round. You know, mm-hmm. when other teams know it's like a toxic situation like this, like the Antonio Brown one, that's why people are comparing other trades that were like first round, second round mm-hmm. involved. But when you have disgruntled players, teams they don't pay the premium.
They don't.
Pay less.
They never do.
It's a buyer's market. Mm-hmm. So you know, Antonio Brown was a third and a fifth round.
Yeah.
So you know. That's you know, I hate to even waste time on that, but you know, that's what's gonna happen ultimately if it's gonna be the end of August or into a game or two, but that'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Donald Penn, you know, that to me there's a lot of hope in him because, you know, one thing I watched Flowers, he's garbage. You know? Like we knew he was a bad tackle, but the guard project, just watch him. I just slowed it down. I couldn't, it was like a train wreck. You couldn't stop rewinding.
Mm-hmm.
Like his foot, he looks like he's gonna trip over his feet every time. You know, he does not get low at all, and he's going to get bull rushed by everybody in our division.
Mm.
So, you know, Wes Martin didn't play for a reason because he's going to be the starter, and it's going to be Donald Penn, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's our hope, but that's the thing. You have no depth behind that. So, you know, that's what's going to impact the season, you know, heavily. That's why they better figure out a way to run the ball.
ASAP. They better run the ball. That better be the mindset, to be honest with you. So, all right, Thursday night, FedEx Field. The Skins take on the Bengals. What do you want to see from this team in the second preseason game?
I want to see a little bit more aggressiveness. You know, like it's preseason, but like you said, the Ravens, the team is still doing stunts. They're doing little things.
Yeah.
And, you know, get Montez Sweat out there. You know, get some of your speed guys out there. Let's, you know, see what's going on. You know, AJ Green's not playing.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't have any number one receiver, and they're gonna try to run the ball a lot. So let's see what this, you know, this starting D could do.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I want to see, you know, I'd like to see Dwayne starting with Wes Martin and Donald Penn,
mm-hmm.
and let him air it out. Let, you know, 20 plus throws, you know, like in the regular season, I want 10 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
But in the preseason, I want to see 20 throws from him at least. because that's what preseason is about. You know, it's not about giving away a game plan. It's just getting him comfortable going against different formations, different coverages. So that's what I want to see. Other than that, winning or losing, it's really irrelevant.
Yeah.
Those are the ones what I want to see from the game, you know. Mm-hmm. And certain players, of course, you want to see. You know, I want to see more of Holcomb because Sean Deion Hamilton's out again. You know, and just like Alabama in freshman year, he's hurt again.
Mm-hmm.
I like him. I love the Alabama guys. I've scouted them all.
Mm-hmm.
But he's always hurt.
Always.
And Holcomb, I kept saying, when I wrote my article out like a month and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
I said he is one step away from being in the starting lineup, and he is right now. I think just like his, you know, when he was a walk-on, I think he's going to walk right onto the Redskins starting unit real quick. If it's not by week one, it'll be pretty quick. So, you know, there's a lot of exciting things happen, but again, it's all on paper. So being an optimistic Redskins fan, man, it's the curse that some of us carry, you know.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to see personally. I wanted to see Colt McCoy, but he's not going to play against. He's not going to play against the Bengals, so looks like he's going to lose this comp easily. It looks like this is Case Keenum's job. But I'm with you. I want to see Haskins air it out. I do want to see Dotson. I want to see him more.
Yeah.
I mean, and not because I'm a Dotson guy. It's because this team is deep enough from all the reports in the wide receiver position that they can play guys. They shouldn't be bubble wrapping guys. They're deep enough.
Right.
So I want to see Dotson play. I want to see Simmons play. I want to see Harmon play. I want to see Paul Richardson's kind of soft. I mean, I'm not to be mean, but it is what it is. Like, he gets hurt easy. So I don't know if I want to play him. I don't want him to play that much. And he's kind of, you know, he's small. He's a smaller guy. And I want to see McLaurin play a little bit. Not a lot, but enough. Just enough.
Agreed.
Just enough.
Agreed.
Yeah, not a lot, but just enough.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. But I do want to see Dotson play because players like Dotson need confidence. And they play with confidence. And if something good happens, he'll probably have a swag. And obviously, you know, in terms of receiver spot, I want to see Robert Davis build on it. In terms of the defensive side, I want to see Holcomb. I want to see Josh Norman and Moreland play together. I want to see that.
Yeah,
I want to see that.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. So that's something I want to see. So who needs to step up though in this preseason game?
I think we definitely need to see a lot from the defensive line. That's what I'm saying before. Like, mm-hmm. there's been a lot of like business talk and this and that, and how dominant they've been in camp, and you know all the video and stuff that I've been watching. You know, I think that they have to show that they're that dominant, even if it happens to be against some second stringers with the Bengals. I want to mm-hmm. see push up front.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to see some aggressive up front. The rest, like I said, these receivers should see more balls than mm-hmm. they see in the first three games of the year. Like, that's what this is about. Like, when the year starts, there should be a more commitment to the run. But
I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. You know, just like you said, Dotson, 50-50 balls. That's what I want to see. I want to mm-hmm. see go routes. I just want to see then put even Case Keenum, you know, he can put the he can throw it, you know,
yeah.
he's got an arm,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
He can throw a deep ball.
Haskins. So the difference is there's an arm, and then Haskins. If you watch, that's one thing I definitely slept on him a little bit during the scouting process. You know, it's a flick of the wrist, and
mm-hmm.
that ball is 50, 60 yards downfield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Griffin had a strong arm too,
yeah.
but he definitely wound up on that.
Yeah.
You know, he would wound up big tug. This guy can just flick it. He's mammoth, you
mm-hmm.
know. Like my guy Paul, that was at camp. He said one thing he noticed when he's watching. He just, this guy just stands out. It's like, he's like, come on, like this is your quarterback, not these other guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, not these other guys. So you know, this is if he looks really good, it's gonna be hard to keep him off the field. You know, because there'll be a lot more pressure going into the season. But you know, in the end, it's probably the safe bet is for Case Keenum to go forward. So you know, I think then. Play him as little as possible. I don't think you really need to play him much in this game and then save him for the dress rehearsal
mm-hmm.
if he's going to be the starter and, you know, let Haskins come in slow. But Colt McCoy, if they were smart, you know, they could release him and he would still be available.
I agree.
If week 5 or 6, he'd still be available. You know, I would do, you know, it wouldn't be burning bridges. It's just like, listen, it's a roster spot. You know,
mm-hmm.
they could go to another running back. Especially this year, another receiver.
Another receiver.
You know, they're
mm-hmm.
they're stacked. You know, the Sims number 2 from Kansas. You know, that kid can flat out play. You know, they're going to have some guys that get cut that are going to be a fourth, fifth receiver on a lot of teams. So, you know, keeping a third quarterback, it's a little bit of a luxury, and especially that he's an injury prone one. So, they're going to do it anyway. But mm-hmm. you know. We'll see what happens, but, you know, it should be – the next two games are going to be – should tell a lot about, you know, not about their game plan, but, you know, who they're looking to be their starters, in my opinion.
So, Adam, man, thanks for being on. So, and before I let you go, Adam, when can our listeners check out the new blog? you know, about the defense, and also how can they catch you on social media?
You can find my articles at burgundyandgoldreport.wordpress.com, and I'm at Twitter at the B&G Report. And so basically all my links, all my, you know, podcast interviews, you know, those are all up on my Twitter page. And just come to my Burgundy and Gold Report WordPress.com. You can find all my articles. Appreciate you having me on, man.
Adam, you know you're my guy, man. So, of course, there's no problem having you on. You're my guy. And, Adam, I'm going to actually be at the game, so I'm going to be tweeting you about what's going on. So we'll be chatting and shooting the breeze, okay?
Of course, man. Always.
All right, my man. All right. Thanks, Adam. Thanks for being on, my man.
Thanks, HTTR, man.
HTTR, you know it, my brother.
All right.
That is my man, Adam, from the Burgundy and Gold Report. That is my guy. I love Adam, man. He knows his stuff. All right. We're going to the Nets. Is Davey built for a real pennant race? Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats podcast will join me after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally, and I am your host. Will T and Ray Jeezy are out, so we've been holding it down. Good show so far. I want to thank Adam for being on. So right now, we have Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats Podcast online. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, Wally. How's it going, man?
I'm fine, Kevin. We had baseball this afternoon. The Nats beat the Houston. The Nats, excuse me. The Nats beat the Cincinnati Reds. It ended up being 17-5. Am I correct? 17-7.
Yeah.
17-7. Big game for the Nats offense. Strasburg was I won't say average. He was below Strasburg ish. He gave up 4 runs in the game. First off, I want to talk about the Nats. And Davey Martinez. They lost a tough one with the Mets, 2 out of 3. But he bounced back with the sweep against the Reds. The Reds getting a 3-game sweep. And this is the Nats. This is a major pennant. The Nats have never been in a pennant race like this. While being in DC, being the Nationals, they have They have the number one wild card spot at the moment. Do you feel like Davey Martinez is built for a real pennant race?
That's a really great question. And I think I know it sounds like a cop out of an answer, but mm-hmm. My answer would be, I don't know. Because he's never done it before. The last season, obviously they were out of it. And, and as you mentioned, the Nats haven't really been in a position like this, since the team's been in DC, the years they've won the division, they've ran away with it most mm-hmm. of the time. In 2012, the Braves were, within 4 or 5 games of them most of the way, but never really got too close. So it's been a while, and not even a while. This is literally the first time Nats fans, are going to have to go down the stretch the last 30, 40 games. Not sure. The team could catch Atlanta, win the NL East, or the team could miss out on the playoffs entirely. As far as Davey Martinez, I think he's gotten better as a manager. I haven't necessarily been a huge fan of his. But the one thing I'll give him, and the one thing that I think should make Nats fans feel better is when you look at the team this year, this team might have the best chemistry mm-hmm. of any Nats team since 2012. I mean, you watch on TV, they're all doing the baby shark thing with Cara.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, these guys seem to really like each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't want to rag on Harper, but maybe get, you know, he's a dude with a big ego. Maybe getting him out of the way helped, and you know, but the chemistry of the team looks really great. So whether that has anything to do with Davey or not, I don't know. But you got to give him at least some credit. These guys look like they enjoy playing baseball every day, and you know, with Davey, the one knock I would have on Davey in his tenure is he tends to burn hot bullpen pitchers into the ground.
Yes.
so right. You know, we've seen it a couple times this year. You know, you have a few games where Suero, mm-hmm. you know, looks lights out, and then he'll use him three or four games in a row,
mm-hmm.
and then Suero will, you know, not be good. He'll get burned out. Obviously, Sean Doolittle will burn out right mm-hmm. now, and has been struggling. You know, Tanner Rainey at one point.
Yep.
Got burned out. You know, and he hasn't been so good.
I think you could
look at his bullpen usage and say that could be an issue. But I would say that, you know, with the additions they made at the trade deadline, and, you know, they also just picked up Greg Holland
mm-hmm.
on a minor league deal, you know, there might just be enough bullpen pitchers so that Davey Martinez, you know, at least has enough guys to not burn them out. But it's a great question. I don't know. What's your take on the 2024?
You know, well, I'm not sure he's built for it. I didn't like how for instance, the Mets series, game one. I didn't like the way he did. I didn't like the amount of rope he gave Doolittle, because at the end of the day, you gave up a 3-run homer to tie the game. It was 6-3. You gave a 3-run homer, and he just didn't have it. Like, forget velocity. Uh-huh. He just didn't have it. The ball didn't have any zip. He wasn't. You know, Doolittle tends to like to go high when he wants that third strikeout, the high fastball. That it was center cut. Uh-huh. Like, the fastball was center cut. So, he didn't have it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you should see that. And then, I didn't like the situation where it was a righty. It was Rosario. Yeah, it was Rosario. Rosario was at the plate. And you kept Doolittle in the game. I'm like, that's the perfect time to put in Rodney. Righty versus right. And at least you get two outs. Go and make that switch. You go to extra innings. You have an opportunity to win the game. What happens is that you kept Doolittle. Rosario got a single, and now you move the runner in a scoring position. Conforto came out, base hit, wins the game. So I just didn't like that move for Davey.
I agree. No, I mean, I think that Mets series, especially the first game of that Mets series, he managed it pretty poorly, leaving Doolittle in. Because I get that whole idea. You know, I get it. It's Doolittle's the closer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a sports team. These are macho dudes. You don't want to take his job away from him until he's failed. But, you know, when Frazier hits the 3-run homer and it's tied, I think at that point you could go get him. Yeah. You know, bring someone. Yeah, you're right. He didn't have it that night. He hasn't really been great lately. It seems like his location is missing, like you've mentioned. It's his fast. It's either he throws balls way high or their center cut.
Yeah.
You know, he's struggling with his location. It was clear he didn't have it. And at that point, the game was tied. So I think, you know, you can go out and get him. And it's not something where you're kind of pulling the rug out from under him or, you know, taking away his confidence as a closer. The game was tied. He had already blown the save.
Of course. Yeah, I've seen Chapman being taked out by the Yankees, and Chapman is lights out. I've seen great closers. When you don't have it, it's okay to take them out. Like, the Nats are in a tight pennant race. You win game one, right? And I'm not going to talk about game two, but you win game one, you win the series. And that was a game that was yours. Like, that was yours. Strauss, you got 6-3. Strauss gave you as much as he can give you. You're up 6-3. The offense played well. He gives up a 3-run homer. Okay, he gives up a 3-run homer. The Mets bullpen isn't that great anyway. Gives him a 3-run homer. Who's to say the next inning, the Nats were able to, you know, add a run and be in a good situation. Maybe they can use one of the relievers to finish it out. He just didn't have it. Like, and that's my thing with Davey. I feel like when I look at Davey as a manager and it gets tight, I don't look at a manager that's comfortable. You know what I mean? Like, when you look at him, he doesn't look comfortable. He looks too timid. He's like, I don't know what to do. I'm stressed out. There's some managers that are stoic. When you look at them, you're like, oh, they got it. They got it handled. Like, as much as people dislike Dusty, when you looked at Dusty, regardless if he made the right decision or wrong decision, he looked stoic. When you look at Girardi, they look stoic. Buck Showalter, it was stoic. Like, Buck wasn't – and these are experienced managers I know I'm mentioning, but still at the same time, when you looked at him, you felt confident. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think the thing that kills me, you know, if I was going to kill Davey, I think there are two games this year against the Braves. The first one was the one that got Trevor Rosenthal.
Oh, my God,
you know,
yes.
They were up 8-4. They're the hottest team in baseball. They're about to beat the Braves. And I think at that point, you know, it would have brought them within, like, maybe 4.5 at the time. But, you know, they're up 8-4. They should win that game, mm-hmm. you know. Then there was another game against the Braves. You know, but instead he puts Rosenthal in, walks the bases loaded, then brings in Rainey. And they lose that game, and the Braves win the next day, and all of a sudden, you know, it looks like they're going to sweep Atlanta and get right back in the race, and then they're, you know, now they're, you know, back out. And then there was another game down in Atlanta where Robles, I believe, hit like a 2-run homer to tie it 3.
Yeah.
Then they bring in Rodney.
Yes.
For like the third day in a row.
Agreed.
There was another game against Colorado home where I think they pitched Rodney
mm-hmm.
a day after he pitched both ends of the doubleheader. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but the thing is, when you look at these games, like right now the Nats, I believe, are 5.5 behind the Braves.
Yeah, uh-huh,
you know,
5.5.
Tonight's result. Uh-huh. If you look at these 3 or 4 games, you know, if they win those, they're a game behind the Braves.
Like
they might win the division. Mm-hmm. So I think you do have a point that he's made some missteps. And I think that, you know, it's a valid point that I think the players like him. I think he's been good for chemistry.
Yeah.
Look, the team seems to like playing with each other. But, you know, in terms of being a tactician, in terms of making these great moves with a bullpen, I'm not sure if that's his best skill for sure.
Yeah, and you would think being under Joe Maddon, like this would be something that he would kind of get. But it just shows that just because you're under a great manager, a guy that is a tactician who the moment isn't too big for him, it doesn't always rub off. You know what I mean? So, like, that's when I look at Davey. I'm like, okay, you're your own guy. And I'm with you. I don't want to feel like I'm bashing Davey because I do think he's gotten better. I'm one of the main people that was like, Davey is garbage. I said that initially. But then when it got to a certain point, there were moves he made. And I was like, you know what? He's getting better. You can tell, like, and not because of the winning streak. There's just certain moves that you're like, okay, That was a solid move. Like, you're improving as a manager. So I just want to say that he is improving. But as, like, this race now, where they're at, he really can't do this scared. He has to do this right, and he has to be smart about it. And he can't worry about ruffling feathers. Like, that shouldn't be your mm-hmm. issue. It should be about winning games, because all these games matter. These games count.
Oh, totally.
You don't want to be honest with you, they're aimed and geared to be a wild card team, get one of the 2 wild card spots. But that shouldn't be the goal. Like, you don't want to be in having that wild card game. You don't want to be one and done. You know, you want to mm-hmm. have the division so you can have multiple games in the postseason. You know what I mean? So that's my thing with Davey. Like, you got to manage it like you're trying to catch the Braves.
Yeah, no, and I don't, you know, I don't know if he's got it. I mean, the problem is that, you know, the games that, you know, we talked about, you know, I mean, you really, you know, you look at 3 or 4 games, and if there's swing, you know, Matt's in first place right now. But, you know, again, you know, you do have to give him some credit mm-hmm. that the team was 19-31.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was writing him off. I mean, we were, you know, we were talking about trading Max Scherzer, Anthony Rendon. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, you know, just selling, you know, anything that wasn't nailed down, trying to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's what people are doing at the end of May. So he was able to take that team and get them to where they're at now, where they're actually a favorite, at least to make, you know, the wild card. You know, he did keep the ship from sinking. But yeah, I think he should rely more on Menhart, the pitching coach.
I mean, you look
at that guy. Look at Joe Ross.
Oh my God! I'm with you.
So, like, Menhart comes in, all of a sudden Joe Ross is mm-hmm. You know, throwing bullets,
mm-hmm.
and he changed his delivery, and Ross, you know, had like 18 innings before he gave up a run.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, it's just like, you know, not everyone's good at everything.
You
know, so pitching isn't his. He wasn't a pitcher, you know, so pitching isn't his skill, then, you know, rely on your pitching coach, because the mm-hmm. pitching coach has proven that he's been a great addition to the team.
Yeah. Ross, Fetty, you know, these guys are doing great work. I'm with you. I think the pitching coach has done a phenomenal job with these individuals. So, Kevin, before I let you go, let my listeners know about your podcast, when they can catch it, and also Talk Nats, the site as well.
Yeah, totally. Thanks. All right, you follow us on Twitter. It's @TalkNatsPodcast. And go to talknats.com. We do the podcast every month or so. It's a pretty loose podcast in terms of when we do it. But, you know, you go to talknats.com. They have stuff up every couple hours. It's an amazing community, probably the best community on the internet if you're a Nats fan. Comment on game threads, meet a bunch of other Nats fans. Really smart baseball talk. So, yeah, check it out.
Hey, I appreciate you for being on, Kevin. Thank you so much. I got passionate. I got a little too passionate about this segment.
Yeah,
well, thank you, Kevin. Hopefully the Nats make the postseason, all right? Thanks again, man. Appreciate you. That is Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats podcast. I was supposed to talk about Antonio Brown and his helmet. I don't know if I have time to do it. So I know I have a guest to talk about the Baltimore Orioles. You all know I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan. So, but I will say this about Antonio Brown before I, you know, since I'm not going to talk about it on the show. AB, you're silly. I don't get you. I don't understand. Like, we're talking about a helmet and you complain about, you know, you won't play. You came back because you lost a lawsuit. It is what it is. Grow up. Just grow up. Grow the fudge up. All right. Speaking of drama, what happened with the Orioles manager Hyde and Chris Davis? Birdwatchers Aaron Gershon will join me after the break to discuss this. You listen to the Urban Sports Thing. For ages, you dig? Deuces.
And get it in, no for sure. You'll get your back up off the wall and get your feet on the floor. You see the boy at the bar with a glass so tall. When I'm done, baby doll, I'ma show you Baltimore. Right now we gon' party, but Cardi, give me some more. It's off the rack, the club pack, I'm pooped up like two doors. Of course I do my two-step, don't give them too much. I'm busted up bad, I drop lashes in my cup. I had enough, they throwin' bowls, see them swinging the street. I got my arm around this smut, can't put any work. Before we work, I got the book stuck. So baby, stop fronting. I got the drink and the smoke. Ain't got to buy enough. I'm not bluffing. It's going down. Understand me. I like my birds nasty. I burst in and catch me. Everything. And you know what I came for. Right now it's going down. Let me on the dance floor. Hold now. That's what the old kids say. I party like it's my birthday. Drinking and still Thursday. Hold now. Shorty, give me what you got. The spot kind of live. Like, whoa now, that's what the old kids say. I party like it's my birthday, drinking and still Thursday. Whoa now, show they give me what you got. The spot kind of loud. I came to shake a load off, so pick the coat off. Mixed drinks, what you think? OJ is Smirnoff, I sip it all. Hey, what can I say? See, I just got paid, but I'm feeling this big. And I'm trying to get laid, I'm buying drinks and they love it. Deepest flowing Chiba, Gucci bag and Gucci bucket. Take a shot from my cousin, he don't know how to act. Came straight out the woods in the club with a sack. Like what you know, no good, but I'm dodging that. The speakers is off the meter, you can't help but the clap. Can't help but the boogie, get loose, but don't push me. We came so deep.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wally, and I am your host. Like I've mentioned already, my boys Will T and Ray Jeezy are out. Right now, we have co-expert at Birds Watcher, Aaron Gershon, on the line. What's going on, Aaron?
Not much. How are you? I was actually, you know what? I was just in the Bronx today. I live 30 minutes from Yankee Stadium. So I did check out the Orioles today.
That's terrible. I'm sorry.
It wasn't. Best game of the series.
I'm so sorry. I want to talk about Chris Davis, but I'm gonna table that. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it later. Why? Like the Yankees are like, if my memory serves me correctly, they are 17-2 against the Orioles. That is so disrespectful. That is so disrespectful.
It's unbelievable, honestly. And, you know, what's crazy about it is last year, obviously, the Orioles were even worse, and the Yankees won 100 games. Yeah. They played the Yankees well. I'm pretty sure it was only 4 or 5 over that the Yankees were against them.
Yeah.
And for a while, it was 500, and then, you know, the wheels continue to fall off. But it's a mix of what it is the Orioles just don't match up with the Yankees at all. Obviously, they have a tremendous offense. The problem for Baltimore is not necessarily the hitting, it's the pitching is so bad. And when you have a team like the Yankees, it's just impossible. But even for the Orioles, I mean, losing 16 in a row to the same opponent,
it's pathetic.
Pathetic. But
it's pathetic.
You know what? They're done with them.
It's pathetic. I mean, it's like,
yeah, I've never seen anything.
I've never seen that in my life. And I grew up like a Baltimore Orioles fan, and we've been bad. Like I've had our 10 years, we've been bad. But we've never. I mean, it's like the Orioles. I'm saying we, like I'm an actual player. But this team is never. Has never, like, when they played the Yankees, they always came up. It was like they always played big for the Yankees. It was like they were amped to play the Yankees. Like, they knew once they saw the pinstripes, either in Camden Yards or they were going to Yankee Stadium, they were going to play one of their better games. They didn't play scared. And now when I watch them play, it's like JV varsity. It's like double A, single A versus a Major League Baseball team. It's like I've never seen it before. And it's, like, really frustrating as an Orioles fan because – over the last 3-4 years, like, yeah, I'll say my Orioles have been competitive. And now watching this, it's been very depressing. And I said this, I know I talked to you about this last time you were on, but it's anytime, every week, it's like something new emerges. And this Yankees ass whooping, I'm going to say it, this Yankees ass whooping of a series has been like, if you're an Orioles fan, it has to be depressing.
it really is. I mean, even for where they're at, I mean, everyone knew what was going to happen this season. It wasn't going to be pretty, but to just get, I mean, they didn't belong in the same field.
Exactly.
They really didn't belong in the same field. Mm. It was really disappointing. I mean, the offense kept them in it, actually, in both games of that doubleheader Monday and even today, but the pitching is just so abysmal.
It's bad.
With the Yankees lineup, and credit to them, I mean, they have such a good team, but if you're a Major League Baseball team, you got to put up more than 2 wins against an opponent.
I know. I mean, the Orioles are like 39-62. I mean, like, really? Like, 39-62.
Oh, what's crazy is, as of now, it's the season that they don't even have the worst record. They're not going to have the number one pick, which is, you know, might even work in their favor. I think they need to take the pitcher from Georgia rather than the first baseman because the pitching depth is disgusting.
Yeah,
hitting is great. There's hitting depth all over the minor league system, and it might work out because Detroit's kind of the opposite. They have some really good pitching prospects like Casey Mize, where they might take the bat from Arizona State, so it might actually work in Baltimore's favor.
So see if you agree with me or not, because I'm all about taking on projects, because it's been that bad. I'm all about taking Orioles. I want the Orioles to take projects now. Like, I actually wanted them to get Matt Harvey. I did. I'm not ashamed to say it. I wanted them to try and match Matt Harvey. Can it get any worse? I also wanted them to bring back Kevin Gausman. I was like, could it get any worse? I'm cool with that. Like, just try it.
You know, I didn't even think of that. That is an outstanding point. Matt Harvey? Really? Matt Harvey is a really good point because, I mean, this guy was, when he broke onto the scene with the Mets, he pitched game one of the World Series.
Yeah.
Started the All-Star game in his home building.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went to Cincinnati last year, where in Cincinnati there's really not much pressure, especially with the Reds who were out of the race at that point, he pitched really well. I mean, his ERA was in the fours. He kept the ball in the ballpark, when Cincinnati is not an easy place to do that either.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed signs of life. And then he went back to L.A. I know the Angels aren't the same as the Dodgers, but still a bigger market, and he stunk. So, you know, the Orioles, obviously passionate fan base, but right now, if you want to find a low pressure situation,
come to Baltimore.
The Orioles are basically a walk up. It's as if right now the Orioles pitching, like they had the kid from AAA called up with a 9 ERA or something. Like
I mean,
Shepherd,
really,
and he pitched well. Yeah. It's like walk on tryouts.
Exactly.
That's what it is. So why not give the guy a chance?
Why
not?
Not
be demanding a lot of money.
I know. It's like the replacements with Keanu Reeves. It's like the worst thing, and it's ridiculous. Like,
That's a great point, though. They could try anything.
Yeah.
Well, what do they have to lose?
Yeah, you're not spending any money. Like, basically, you're just taking a flyer on pitchers. I mean, you had Gausman. Basically, you could just, like, you want to trade with Atlanta. You could just get Gausman back. Mm-hmm. Does it hurt your feelings?
Yeah.
Does it really? You won. You won the trade.
Honestly, the Gausman trade has definitely worked out for the Orioles because they got some pretty good prospects out of that deal, and Gausman hasn't panned out. And then you could turn around, like you said, maybe kind of do a rebuild project with him, and maybe that's something they consider during the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, any of those pitchers that are just not going to demand money have had success. I don't see why the Orioles can't take a flyer on
them. It's better than putting out pitchers like Brooks and whatnot. Like, these are horrible pitchers. These dudes shouldn't be pitching in the majors. They should be relievers at best. It's like, stop it.
Yeah. The Orioles don't even – John Means obviously hasn't been the same for the second half. Hard to ask him to replicate that.
Mm-hmm.
But other than him, it's like, who do you have that you can trust on the
pitching staff?
Then both the bullpen and in the in the rotation. And really, the guys who you're excited about, like D.L. Hall and Grayson Rodriguez, are the low levels of the minors. So
yeah.
They're not an option for a good two more years. So it's really a tough spot. And like you said, taking flyers on guys for next year could be, if the Orioles are looking to take a little bit of the next step, which would be
something,
I don't know, 70 wins?
Yeah, something.
I mean, might even be too much, but
yeah, I
think, why not? You got to slowly build this thing up.
Yeah, that is too much right now. It's just sad. It's just yeah. Sad, and I feel bad for my fellow Baltimore Oriole fans. Like, this is not going to get any better, and it's a historic fan base. You know what I mean, in terms of baseball in Baltimore. Yeah. And I mean, I get it. Everybody wants to be the Astros. I get it. Like, I get it.
And especially Michael Lyons.
Yeah, yep. I get it. But it's depressing. When you want to watch a sports team, it's depressing.
Yeah, one thing I'll say that's nice is the Orioles' farm system has gotten a lot better. And what's nice about the Orioles, unlike most teams, is most of their affiliates are in the DMV.
Yeah.
So they are, I'd go watch Adley Rutschman play wherever the heck she is. Same with some of the other guys. So there's that.
That's true. That is true. So, all right. So I'm going to go to Brandon Hyde, manager. I do feel bad for him because, this is stressful for him. I can understand.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
very, very stressful. So. Yeah. He had an altercation with Chris Davis when they were getting their tails whipped by the Yankees again. And, something was said. Who knows what was said? I have an idea what was said, but something was said. And the two of the – and I believe it was in the middle of the fifth inning. The two of them, got into it. Some words were being thrown out there. And Chris Davis had to be moved, but had to be pushed to side by Mark Trumbo. What were your thoughts when you saw that happening?
The first thing is, you think of, okay, this is a 38-9 win team at this point in the year.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking his frustration out. He's a veteran player. And he got pulled from the game at that point. That was my first reaction, man, he's just had enough. But then, I kind of took some time and thought about it, the human element of it for Davis. And this was a guy who was an all-star, who led the league in home runs. He led the league in RBIs twice. And not only did he do that individually, but he was a part of three Baltimore Orioles postseason teams. And in that 2012 team that kind of came out of nowhere and made the playoffs, obviously they played the Yankees really tough in the ALDS that year. He was a part of that. He was a part of bringing the Orioles back to relevancy for at least, half the decade here. And now he's a shell of his former self. I mean, as a player, he's batting 178, the OBP's in the 200s. He's just, really, that's the best way to put it, a shell of his former self. And the team is abysmal, and this was just, 2.5 years ago, this team was in the playoffs. And 5 years ago, they were in the ALCS.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, it's got to just be, it's hard not to feel bad for the guy because he's dealing with individual struggles, and this team was a team that he was a part of, he was playing in Camden Yards when it was sold out. They were playing in the postseason, meaningful games. People were picking them to win the World Series, and now they're playing in front of almost nobody.
Yeah.
And the team stinks, and he knows it. And he stinks right now, which is – and I think it was just he made that error. Something was said about it, and it set him off. And it's got – just the human element, it's got to be he's just so fed up with the entire situation. And, it's going to come out. It's going to come out at some point. And I think whatever said just triggered it.
Do you think that Brandon...
Like you said, we'll never know.
Do you think that Brandon Hyde called him a bum?
He might have said... I think it might have been more of a... Who knows, man? And you know what? Brandon Hyde... I'm glad you said that because Brandon Hyde is so brutally honest. I don't know if you listen to his press conferences.
He's
but
honest.
The dude is brutally
he
honest.
He is very honest.
Plays into this team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with the Gleyber Torres thing, this guy's hit.
Yeah.
I mean, a hell of a player, but he hit 13 home runs against them this year.
Exactly.
You think they can make a little bit of an adjustment as professional baseball players.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're leaving these damn sliders right over the middle of the plate, and he's killing them. And he said after the game, he's like, well, I thought we were supposed to make a pitch to him, but I guess that wasn't going to happen. So I had to walk him. I mean, he's laying into these guys. You know what? That's good because there needs to be an expectation of we're not going to accept this. This is not how the Orioles are going to be forever. And I know he knows deep down, this is what he's got to deal with for at least this year and probably next year and hopefully not much longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's holding these guys to a high standard. He's saying, hey, this is not going to be the norm around here. I understand, like, for a lot of these pitchers, it's your rookie year and whatever, but you ain't going to be here if you continue like this. And he's letting him know, and he's putting him on notice. He's not, he's just, I love him, honestly.
I love him too. I like him too.
Perfect fit for a team like this, because he is not accepting this as the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's temporary, and that's good, because they need someone like that. Some managers would just say, screw it. Like, my team sucks. I can't deal with it. We'll get them next year type thing. There's kind of acceptance. Brandon High, there's no acceptance. He wants to win every single one of these games. If we're up to him, the Orioles have finished the year. I think they're at 82 losses now. They finish 80-82.
Yeah.
There's no tanking in his mind.
Yeah.
But that's just the reality of it. But good for him trying to fight against it.
No, I feel for him, because I could tell he's trying. He's trying very, very hard. I mean, just...
Yeah, and this is his first managerial job. This is a job he's probably dreamed of. And this is the crappy situation.
That is so jacked up, though. To be honest with you, real talk, that is so jacked up. Like, this is your first managerial job, right? And you got to deal with this crap. Like, seriously, like, you have to deal with, like, you've seen it from a distance, right? Managers see other teams from a distance. From a distance, like, this Orioles team with Buck had guys who had star ability. Like, you had Adam Jones, you had Machado, you had Jonathan Scope. You had, Chris Davis when he was good. You had Trumbo. Like, you had individuals who put up numbers, right? And then you come here.
Yeah.
And you knew what he knew what he's getting himself into. But you come here and you get the bare minimum. Like, you get nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. Like, all you have a guy who's overpaid, who strikes out all the time. You have, I can't even say you, like, you have, the only thing you have is Mancini that, you know, somebody that you can say has a lot of potential to be a to be an all-star caliber player in the next couple of seasons. That's all you have, to be honest with you. It's depressing.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Alex Cora last year, first year, he got to walk into a situation with the Red Sox where they were a juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Alex Cora is a good guy, but look at them this year. They're not playing as well, and the team is just around the 500 line, and now you're saying, oh, wow, Alex Cora, maybe you weren't so great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe you just walked into a good situation. So mm-hmm. I think the fan base has done a good job at not getting upset with Brandon High, because this ain't his fault. And I think he's doing a way better job than me. Even Ron Gardenhire with the Tigers, who's a veteran manager, handling their situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think he might even be doing a better job than Don Mattingly, who's been around the game forever.
Yes.
And with the Marlins in their situation. So I'm glad at least the fan base didn't get mad at Brandon High for that altercation. I don't think there's anything to get mad at.
No, not at all.
I feel genuinely bad for everyone involved.
Yeah, I agree. Me too. I feel bad for Chris Davis. Because when I called him a bum, like when I said that about Chris Davis, I meant that as a term of endearment. not really. But for Chris Davis, I feel bad for him because I root for Chris Davis. Like, I really do root for Chris Davis. Because I think from a distance, because I don't know Chris Davis personally, from a distance, he seems like a really nice guy. Like, he seems like a very...
He does a lot for the community,
I know,
too. I mean, him and his wife are doing stuff all the time.
He just seems like a very nice guy. And you can tell that he's trying so hard. Like, some people are like, man, I'm paid. Screw it. I don't care. But he's trying so hard.
Look at Cole Ellsbury. The dude's on an island. I'm convinced he's not even alive.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't care about baseball anymore. And you look at Chris Davis, he's trying. You know, he's trying new things and everything. And he just can't. I mean, for whatever reason, it's just not happening for him right now. So I feel bad for him. I root for him. I want him to get hits. I would love for him to throw a couple of bunts to the left side of the field. That way he can run out and get some infield hits, boost the average up, and he'll feel better about himself. But it's just not happening. And he's not the guy that we saw a couple of years ago, where he was an MVP candidate, or where he was like really, you know, leading his team. So I'm with you. I just feel bad for everybody involved, and Brandon High. So do you feel like this is repairable? Do you feel like the issue is dead, or it can carry over, or you think it's nothing?
Mm-hmm. I think it's dead. Honestly, okay. I really think it was a case of frustration. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard, like we've been talking about here, it's hard not to blame either side for being frustrated. Chris Davis is a storied player. He really is. Mm-hmm. He had some magical moments that, in Baltimore, no one's going to forget. I mean, he was a huge reason that this team went from, you know, terrible like they are now to playoff team.
Yeah.
And he was a big part of that. Mm-hmm. And now he's only 33. He's a shell of his former self, and the team stinks, and he's frustrated. And with Brandon Hyde, I mean, like, first managerial job. He's trying to hold guys accountable. They're not getting any results. You know, a veteran guy like Davis makes an error where you're not expecting that from him. Whereas, you know, if it's someone like a Stevie Wilkerson or, you know, a younger player, it's like, you know, all right, he's adjusting. But Davis, he's the guy you're counting on to be a veteran and a leader on and off the field and lead by example. And that would be, you know, making the play like that. And I think tension just blew over. And I think things were said that neither necessarily meant. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's dead, though. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything to worry about. And if it is, if it's something that's still going on, there's a real problem. But
yeah.
I don't really think there is. I mean, they came out and I know the Yankees series wasn't great, but against Houston, they had a comeback win.
Yeah.
And it looked, it was a really impressive win. They beat up Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander had his worst game of the season against Baltimore.
I know.
I mean, that says something about this team's fight.
Yeah.
And that's, I think a lot of that's Brandon Hyde.
I know. I wish they could fight a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, wins like that are like, this is that, that's their World Series.
I know. Believe me, Aaron, I know. And it's so sad, but I know. I know. You're listening to the Urban Sports. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team right now. I have Bird Watchers, Aaron Gershon on the line. So, Aaron, do you feel that, I know it's probably, it won't happen, but do you think this could be Chris Davis's last season with the Orioles? Or...
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't think so because, mm-hmm. one, to his credit, he's so freaking determined to get back to just, mm-hmm. half of what he used to be. Because, mm-hmm. if he was half of what he used to be,
I'll be great.
In this day and age of baseball, you know, it's the 20 home run player.
Yeah.
So I think that guy has such a drive that he's going to keep playing. So that takes out the retirement equation. The other equation would be with the Orioles eat the contract or try to flip it. A, no one's going to take that contract. It's a terrible contract, and no team can afford it. And B, the Orioles right now, they're still, you know, they're a smaller market team. They don't have the ability to just absorb a contract like that. They got to try to milk it for all it's worth, and maybe he can run into a few balls next year or even in the second half this year, or even just being a veteran presence, which I know guys on that team love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really do. You see them going up to him after at-bats, whether it's him or others. He is an asset in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they just need to, you know, deal with the fact that one of the 25-man roster spots is going to be his and take it from there.
Yeah, I think he'll be here next season. I mean, I'm with you. I think he'll be here next season.
Yeah.
I'm with you, though. Again, he's liked in that clubhouse. You can see it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it. You know what? They show the dugout, and people are always around him. And it's usually after, like, a younger player like a Wilkerson or Santander strikes out, they're going up to him asking for advice,
mm-hmm.
because he's been there, he's done that. The results might not be there right now, and he might not be leading by example with the production, but he is. He's definitely not leading by example in production right now, but he's been there, and he's been a rookie. I mean, in Texas, he wasn't anything like this.
Yeah.
When he came to Baltimore in 11 and took off, I mean, I just think he's valuable in that way.
Yeah. No, he is valuable. I mean, he's a vet. He's now a vet. That's wild. Chris Davis is a vet now.
He's the only vet the Baltimore Orioles have.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I root for him. I root for him. Hopefully, if he just can just get, like, hot next season early, then we can just trade him. Just quick. Don't even hesitate. Just trade him.
Yeah. If someone gives an offer on the table, even if it's for cash, like $500.
Just take it. You take it. Like, yeah.
Who knows? The way things have gone with the Orioles, watch, he'd get traded and he'd turn into an MVP.
That's fine.
I'd root for him.
I'd root for him. I would root for him, too. I would be happy for him.
You know what? Uh-huh. You know what? One thing with Chris Davis that is frustrating is Ryan Mountcastle is ready
mm-hmm.
that first base
yeah.
at AAA. He's been one of the best hitters in minor league baseball this year at mm-hmm. AAA, and he mm-hmm. is ready to be in the big leagues. And Chris Davis
is taking
at first base. And Renato Nunez, you can't send down either. He plays a little bit of first.
Yeah.
Trey Mancini plays a little bit of first. So he's kind of just blocked. And if Chris Davis was there, he wouldn't be blocked.
Yeah, I know. I know. Too bad, Chris. It's okay, though.
Yeah.
Chris will be – I feel bad for Chris. I really – because he needs to – I just wish he could just – I just want him to hit Noah. And it's funny, like you mentioned, in today's baseball, all he has to do is hit homers. Like, I'm cool with the strikeouts. Yeah. Everybody strikeouts now. It doesn't matter. Everybody strikes out. Just hit a home run. Just hit a home run that, like, just give me 25, 30 home runs, and we're good again. Like, you would be the norm.
Renato Nunez, and that's nothing personal to him. He's been amazingly good. But if he can hit 26 home runs, I don't. Chris Davis with his talent, you'd think the guy could hit 15.
Yes, exactly. Especially the bombs he used to hit. Like oh my god!
I mean, it crushed. You don't just get called crush.
Yeah. He had one-handed homers. He used to hit one-handed homers. Now you just can't. Yeah, now you can't hit nothing. It's like, come on now, shoot. Yeah, like,
it's I honestly never saw anything like it with the Yankees, but I've never seen anything like it with a player like Chris Davis, went from perennial All-Star, MVP caliber guy to can't hit the ball.
Can't hit the ball.
And sad.
It is. It's like an ESPN 30 for 30 special. So, hey, Aaron, man, thanks for being on, my man. So, you know, I appreciate you. So, before I let you go, how can folks check out your material, and also let my listeners know about Birds Watchers?
Yeah, Birds Watcher, fan-sided network, obviously, blogs for every sports team, baseball, NFL, NHL, NBA. So we're the Baltimore Orioles site, of course, and like I said, last month was our biggest page view month ever, so we really appreciate that.
Awesome.
So just, you know, find us on Twitter, Bird Watcher. Google us will be right there. We're pretty easy to find, and, you know, we post some pretty good stuff. We're always on there working, and a lot of minor league stuff, which is because that's, you know, we're trying to stay positive. That was what we talked about in August. Because at this point, who wants to read about Chris Davis?
I respect that.
The Orioles lose again. We try to keep it as positive as possible.
I respect that.
Find some guys in the minor leagues who no one's ever heard of, and they're batting 400. We're going to write about them. We'll find them. So we try to keep it positive, and, you know, we got some pretty talented guys over there.
You just gave me an idea. Next time I have you on, we're going to talk about the minor leagues. That's what we're going to talk about.
You know what? Go for it. That's the happy place.
That's the happy place. Because Bowie is starting to turn up. Bowie is starting to really be very competitive. You know what? We're going to talk minor leagues. I'm not going to talk about what the Orioles, the big squad is doing. We're going to talk about the minor league system. I like that.
There you go. The minor league playoffs are coming.
Exactly.
The Orioles.
I like that idea.
That's the real playoffs.
That's the real playoffs. Forget this little World Series crap, you know, and wild card spots and playing. Forget that stuff. ALCS, NLCS, who cares? It's all about the minor league postseason.
Go Bay Sox.
Hey, Aaron, I appreciate you, my man. Thank you for being on.
Yeah, anytime, man. Anytime.
All right. Thanks again. I love Aaron. Aaron's a great guy. I just had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and I have a great rapport with him already. All right. That is Aaron Gershaw from Birds Watcher. Make sure, and that's the F, you know, the fan side site. So on Twitter, it's at Birds Watcher FS. Make sure you follow Birds Watcher, and so you can, you know, see the tweets and also pick up on the content as well. Also, follow Aaron. I think Aaron's Twitter handle, I'm gonna look it up for you all, because I follow Aaron. I'm gonna make sure I find it. Hold up, wait a minute, let me put some pimping in it. It is at AGERSHON999. So make sure you follow Aaron. Aaron is a cool cat. But this has been a great show. Appreciate everybody for being on. I appreciate Adam, Aaron, also Kevin from Talk Nats. Appreciate everybody. Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report. And as you all know, Aaron from Birds Watcher. I appreciate all of my guests. Cool guys. Great individuals. So I guess it's time to close the show out. How can I close this show out? I know. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Site for ages. You dig? Deuces. Hey, Mega. Lead us out, big homie.